Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Dottino, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you prefer to get in touch with us that way. And folks, I'm going to just open up the phones early today. Not right now, but in a couple minutes because, frankly, I'm not sure what your pulse is right now. I'm not sure what you're going to want to talk about. We can get into the X's and O's of the game on Sunday if you want. Even though win or loss really doesn't matter for the Giants. Me and Paul will give our opinion on the game in just a second. We could talk about potential playoff matchups. We could talk about strategy in terms of resting players if you like. We still don't really know what Ben McAdoo is planning, to be quite honest
with
you, besides the fact that he said Eli Manning and the starters will play. He declined to say how much they will play when he was asked. And he said they'll play to win the game. So beyond that, we don't have any really concrete answers for you. We can go around the league, talk playoff picture. Whatever you want to talk about, we're here for the next 60 minutes or so. Paul, how are you? Are you excited for the final regular season game, or have you tempered yourself a little bit, given we know where the Giants are going to be in terms of playoff seeding in the first round of the playoffs?
I'm going to give away a little bit of what I'm thinking about this game by telling you about my reaction.
Okay.
I am eager to see reps and reps and more reps
for
guys like Okwara, Owa Odigizua, who have played some, but they could use more, especially in a hostile road environment where you know the Redskins are playing for their playoff lives. They're going to be playing at 175%, butts to the wall, absolutely trying to do everything they possibly can to stay alive. And I think that is a great experience for guys like Collins and Okwara, all the young guys, all these newbies, so to speak, who have been around here for only a year or two. I think, Roger Lewis. I can't wait to see Roger Lewis on Sunday. I hope he catches a touchdown pass.
And remember, these guys are playing against a team that has everything to play for.
Yes, that's my point.
Win this game, they're in. So it will be a good way to judge exactly where
Tremendous.
Those guys are. Now, I want to go back for a second and look at the first matchup between these two teams. And even though the Redskins won, Paul, that contest.
Why are you going to do this
to me? The Giants did outgain the Redskins in that game by 50 yards.
It was a charity game.
Will you let me finish?
Go ahead.
The Giants were 4 of 9 on third down, 44%, not bad. But the big problem in this game was twofold. One, the Giants were just 2 of 5 in the red zone. Now, they held the Redskins to 0 of 4 in the red zone, which certainly mitigated that issue. But the bigger issue in this game, obviously, and Paul just mentioned the charity factor in this game, were the turnovers and fumbles. The Giants fumbled three times, lost one of them. Eli Manning threw two interceptions. And really, when all was said and done, that was the difference in this game against the Redskins back in week number three.
Throw in the season-high 11 penalties.
Yep.
Charity. That game, when I look at the Giants' five losses, and please feel free to disagree.
Disagree.
I look at the Giants' five losses. They got beat by Green Bay.
Yep.
They got belted by Minnesota.
Agreed.
Okay. They got hammered by Pittsburgh. However, however, they gave the game away to the Redskins. Their only home loss of the season, 7-1 at MetLife this year. Their best record ever in the new building, by the way. And I thought, quite frankly, they were rather generous and they got some help from the Zebras in Philadelphia. So to me, the Giants really got beat three times this year. Not five, but three. My thoughts.
Okay, that's fine. Couple things I want to keep an eye on in this game. From the Redskins' perspective, how much do you think Jordan Reed has left in him with that bad shoulder? Because I watched him play the last two games he did play in.
Yeah.
He rested last week. And boy, he couldn't do a whole lot. I mean, I give the guy credit for trying to play through this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clear, whenever he makes any sort of contact with that shoulder, he has to recoil. That's how bad it is. And it's not even big hits either. It's simple, you know, hand finding the line of scrimmage, things like that. He just can't do it. He'll try to play, obviously. There's seasons on the line. Give him credit for that. But how effective do you think he can be in this game?
I don't think much, John. You know, quite honestly, I'm even surprised at this point if he gets hit, if he can hold on to the ball.
That's a good point.
You know, I mean, it's bad. And I feel for him because, let's face it,
he's a good player.
Early in his career, he had injury trouble. And that's what prevented him from becoming one of the top-flight tight ends in the league.
And that was mostly lower body issues.
Then he finally got healthy.
Correct.
And then he started putting up numbers, and people were like, oh, he's really good. And now he's hurt again.
Yeah.
I feel for him. I really do. But Having said that, okay, guess what? Every team in Week 17 has got some bumps and bruises. And as I've said in this quicksand of parody, in a lot of ways, it's the teams that are the healthiest who will have the better chances to keep going.
And by the way, Vernon Davis, not a bad backup.
Not at all.
So he could still do some things for the Redskins, something to keep an eye on. DeSean Jackson's on one of the best stretches of his career right now. Three straight games with 100 yards, I believe 4 out of 5, if I'm not mistaken. And boy, I know he's 30 now, but
he's still good.
There was this play, and it was an incomplete pass, actually. I was going through the DeSean Jackson tapes. I was pulling plays for Carl Banks for strategy. And there was a play against the Chicago Bears where he runs this deep drag deep down the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
And about 30 yards down the field, there are three Bears around him. He's not ahead of either one of them.
Oh,
in about a 15-yard span, he's 6 yards ahead of all three guys.
I know the play.
Now, Cousins overthrows him. But holy cow, he ran away from those guys, Paul. And these are defensive backs that have speed like they were standing still. It was amazing.
I laugh. Do you think that there's any Giants fan out there who needs to know about DeSean Jackson?
No. But I just thought that specific play.
I'm sorry.
It was just a really amazing show of his speed. Even though it didn't turn into a touchdown or a catch even, it was just, wow. He's fast.
He's flat out deadly with his feet. There's no question about it. And that, you know what? The other day on First and 10, which will air tonight on MSG, the one number that I brought up in talking about the Redskins passing game, they lead the league in 25 yards or more completions.
And Kirk Cousins is one of the best passers in the league throwing the ball down the field.
He's going to wing it.
Yeah.
He's going to look downfield, and he wants the big play, and they've got the speed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's the one thing that I know Landon Collins mentioned to me the other day, and in talking to Banks about it yesterday too, the Giants probably still giving up a few more long passes than they would like to have this year. And the Redskins will test that.
Oh, yeah, chunk plays. The Giants, in fact, if there's one big weakness of this Giants defense, Paul, to me, it's the chunk plays they've given up. They've given up – when they give up points, it's because of big plays.
It's not in the red zone, that's for sure.
Correct. And it's not because teams are running the ball on them up and down the field and sustaining long drives. When they give up plays, it's big plays, and that's how teams score.
So that's good, because if you're trying to, quote, prime yourself for the playoffs, this is the team that is going to test you in your weakest area.
I agree. Number two, this is something that I want to kind of keep an eye on. You mentioned how the young guys want to play. I, frankly, want to see this team play better on the road. This team has not played well on the road this year. Only 3 road wins. 1 was a neutral field, so I'm throwing that one out. And you want to talk about charity. There was no team more charitable this year than the Los Angeles Rams in the game in London with Case Keenum's interception fest. So,
well, a lot of pressure involved. I don't want to cheat Landon Collins out of what he did.
How about
DRC. He caught it.
Paul.
He caught it. It was a punt. He caught it.
I've thrown balls to my 2-year-old nephew that were harder to catch than that Dominic Rogers Cromartie.
There was pressure.
Okay.
There was pressure.
Oh, my God. It's allowed to admit that the Rams gave a couple gifts, Paul. Doesn't take anything away from the victory.
Okay.
It happens in the league. It's fine.
Yes, it's okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
There we go. Thank you. I want to see the team play.
I'm trying to have a little funnier today, folks, because it's the end of the week. Honestly, it's the end of the week.
I want to see the Giants play a little bit better on the road. Because you mentioned when they played against Philly last week on the road, they made a lot of mistakes. Their lone win at home in Dallas, their most impressive road win in Dallas week one, it wasn't exactly...
Way back when, too.
Right, way back when, and it wasn't exactly an offensive showing in that game either. And, you know, then their other road win was in Cleveland. Whoop-dee-doo, you won against the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland. Who cares?
I know.
So, to me, I want to see this team, specifically this offense, go on the road into a hostile environment and play well, not make mistakes, be efficient. I want to see some of that. And frankly, I want to see the offensive line block, because I think it's a lot easier for this offensive line to block at home than it is on the road when it's loud and it's noisy. And we've seen a couple games, Paul, with these loud venues where we think Bobby Hart's committing false start penalties left and right because he's so quick off the snap. And he's really close on a lot of those. So I want to see this team perform well on the road, because as you and I both well know, unless something really weird happens, they got to play 3 road games if they want to get to the Super Bowl.
Right.
And so far this year, they have not shown that they're going to be able to win three straight road games.
Again, another angle here where they're being tested in something that either they're unproven at or have not been great at. And if you subscribe to the theory that this is a warm-up game for the playoffs, this is a pretest for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. If you subscribe to that, and a lot of people want to do that, you know what? This is the perfect opponent to do it with. Division rival, on the road, needs a playoff game, has a strength that matches up against your weakness. Could you handpick a better situation for a pretest?
No, you can't.
I couldn't.
I think it's a really good situation. This is the final thing I'll ask you before we get to the calls at 201-939-4513. I know we got calls coming in already. Giant fans very excited as the Giants hone in here on the playoffs. We have a full bank of calls. Final question. Rank in order the Giants' four potential playoff opponents in preference of teams that you would like to play in the first round.
Okay, we've had this conversation around the facility all week, and everybody seems to have a different feeling on this.
I know.
So I don't think there's a right or wrong.
I agree, and I don't think we're going to be on exactly the same page on this either. But I think both of us,
well, Detroit's number one
on the list is going to be the same, number one.
Yeah. And number two for me is Atlanta, followed by Green Bay, followed by Seattle.
See, I'm swapping. Number one for me is Detroit. Green Bay for me is the number three spot. I am not afraid of the Seahawks this year.
Okay.
I do not like the matchup with their defensive ends, and that scares the bejesus out of me.
That's why they're four for me.
But I love our defensive line against that offensive line. We're going to give Russell Wilson and the Seahawks just as many issues as the Seattle defense is going to give the Giants. So, and their offense is messed up. They can't run the football. That's going to be a grinded-out, low-scoring game. And I know it's a hard place to play. I'm not downplaying that. But they just lost to the Cardinals at home. So why can't they lose to the Giants at home? I think the Packers are three. They're hot. Aaron Rodgers is playing well, but I still don't think this is a vintage Packers team. They're too banged up on defense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a believer in the Falcons. I know you're not. I think they have a very balanced offense. They average more than 30 points per game. They can run it. He has multiple targets he can get the ball to, and the defense is young and it's getting better. They have a good edge rusher in Beasley coming off the edge who's becoming a very nice player, one of your tweeners that
all
you love so
points.
Much.
All legit points.
I think the Falcons are extremely, extremely good this year, and I'm a big Matt Ryan guy. I know a lot of people aren't. I think Matt Ryan's a damn good quarterback.
At home, which the Giants would have to be in his place.
Right, and the Falcons will, as long as they take care of business to beat the Saints this
they're
week,
in the dome.
They're going to be at home until they have to go play
and that
Dallas
is a problem.
In the NFC Championship game, if the Cowboys even get that far. The Falcons might end up being home for all three playoff games.
Could
if
happen.
Someone knocks off Dallas.
Could happen. Could happen. And that is the part that gives me some trepidation about Atlanta. But I'm taking a totally different angle on this. I think the Giants' defense that's only allowed 15 points a game over the second half of the season right now is got to be one of the top three defenses in the NFL over the last month and a half.
I'll buy that.
Two
sure.
months.
No question.
Okay.
At worst, top five, but I agree, probably top three.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume that this defense is not going to give up more than 23 points in any one playoff game, no matter who it is they play, including Matt Ryan and all the wonderful weapons that he has.
Assuming there's no defensive scores or special teams.
Right.
Touchdowns. Okay.
I think if they're averaging 15 allowed, to say that even the great explosive Atlanta Falcons max at 23, I'm not even sure they get more than 20, I'll say 23.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, so I'm saying, can the Giants' offense muster up 24 points against the Atlanta Falcons in that dome? And I'm saying, yeah, I think they can because I still don't buy the Falcons' defense being that good.
See, here's how I look at it. I consider playing the Falcons very similar to playing the Steelers. And I don't like the way the Giants played against Pittsburgh a few weeks ago because the Steelers, like you said, they're a really good offense. And I think it's fair to compare the Falcons' offense to the Steelers' offense.
Yeah.
They're both very strong. So I think the Falcons, like you said, we'll put up points in the, around 23, 24 points. And based on recent history with this Giants offense, I worry about the Giants offense being able to match that. I think this Giants team is built for a knock-em-down, knuckle-dragging, grinded-out game against the Seahawks. I think they're designed to win those types of games. They're defensive-oriented, be physical. They can win that type of game. The reason I have the Packers and the Falcons at the bottom of my list of teams I want to play.
You don't want to get into the mid-20s.
I don't want.
That's why.
I don't want the Giants to have to score 24.
And that's not a bad philosophy. Again, I don't think there's a right or wrong here.
I agree with you.
I understand the logic there. That's not bad logic. I still have some belief in Eli and his receivers. And I think that the offensive line's pass pro, even the other day against Philadelphia, it wasn't as bad as you think it was.
Eli got hit.
He
did.
He also 63 attempts.
I know. I agree with
that. That's a lot of dropbacks. Yeah, and then on top of that, 7 drops from his receivers.
I agree.
7 drops.
Yeah, but every game this year, Paul, you've been able to point to 3 or 4 mistakes
I know.
By different people,
but
whether
you know
it's
what?
Eli or a receiver or
haven't
the
they scored a minimum of 23.6 times this year?
I'd have to look at the schedule.
I think they have.
I mean, that's not a lot.
No, but the point is it's not a once-in-a-lifetime deal.
No.
It's not like they did it once or twice. They've scored at least 23 points, and I do want you to look it up. I bet you they've done it enough of times where it's not an aberration.
They've scored 23 points twice since October 23rd, once since the bye, and that was against the Eagles. I'm sorry, twice since the bye.
Okay.
The Eagles and the Browns. So twice in the second half of the year. Overall this season, they've done it four times. They did it against the Redskins in week number 3. They did it against the Ravens in week number 6. They did it against the Eagles in week number 9. And they did it against the Browns in week number 12.
All right. And I think you would agree the Ravens and the Eagles are better defensively than the Falcons are.
True, but the Ravens also just gave a couple really big plays in the fourth quarter, too. Which
understood, but the Giants have some guys who can make big plays in the blink of an eye.
I agree with that.
So I'll take my shot. I think what you said to me before is actually why I don't want any part of the Seahawks. I think their defensive front would dominate the Giants' offensive front, and Eli's throwing the ball 63 times.
And that's fair. And that's why
I don't want that.
And you know what? And I absolutely get where you're coming from on that, because Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril should give every Giant fan nightmares.
That's bad.
One-on-one against the young tackles.
And with the crowd noise, that offensive line, that building, that's bad.
Fair. No, but here's the thing. Honestly, and I'm not even being over the top here, and it's not my intention to be over the top. I believe if the Giants played the Seahawks would be hard-pressed to score more than 10 or 13.
I think you could see a 17-14 game.
I think if the Seahawks get to 14, I'm disappointed in the defense. That's how much they've, in my opinion, how much the Seahawks have struggled.
Yeah, but
this year.
The bad news is, I'm telling you right now, Seattle's defense probably turns over the Giants 3 times in that game.
That's fair.
And they could easily not only score points, but they get field position.
Remember, they don't have Earl Thomas, though, and he's one of their big turnover guys in the second
half. I'm talking about forced fumble sack.
I get that. Fair enough. All right, folks, let's get to you. 201-939-4513. Calvin in New Jersey has been holding the longest. Calvin, what's up?
Hey, what's going on?
Hi.
Hey, Calvin.
Excited to talk about the playoff picture this year in New York.
Go ahead.
Definitely everything's excited. Potentially, an NFC championship game could be played in New York. I'm pretty sure everybody around the area is excited about that.
Well, Calvin, I wouldn't hold my breath about the Giants hosting the NFC championship game. That is somewhat far-fetched.
A lot of things have to happen, my man. A lot of things have to happen.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the secondary.
Sure.
Fantastic job by Spags, the organization, getting everybody grouped up over there. We got Eli Apple, Landon Collins. Players like that, you know, coming out there on the field and basically, let's look at the takeaways, okay? The takeaways in the beginning of the season. This defense right now, it's going to be a quarterback nightmare, you know, for somebody to come see that defense in the playoffs. What quarterback right now would want to come see that defense in the playoffs?
No one.
You look at Aaron Rodgers this past week, what they did in Green Bay, the passing attack. He's completely 100% healthy. We know that. But if Giants were to play Green Bay this year again in the Tundra, I'd take the Giants to exceed that game because of the defense.
Just remember, though, the Packers are playing a lot better offensively now than they were when the Giants played them earlier in the year, too.
Yeah, but this right. Giants defense isn't shredded in the secondary like they were. Different team.
I agree with that, too. That's absolutely fair.
Different team. Mm-hmm. And also, right, Vernon was playing with a really bad hand at that point in the season, too.
No, agree. But the Packers do have one of the best pass protection offensive lines in the league.
And that's the thing. Both teams are significantly different and better than they were
in Green
Bay.
You almost have to throw that game out.
Yeah. It's almost, to me, that's definitely almost like an exhibition game. That's how worthless that game is, honestly.
The winner of that game is going to the Super Bowl. I definitely agree.
Winner of what game?
The winner of that game. The winner, if Green Bay was to play New York, the winner of that game, I'll take them to win the Super Bowl.
Not just to go, definitely, to win it now. To win it now.
To win it, yeah, to definitely win it.
Wow. Wow.
You got two quarterbacks.
You're really getting
there,
ahead of yourself.
Happy holidays.
Hey, you know what? Great. If that happens, wonderful. But you're really jumping a couple of blocks ahead right there.
Right. But we also have to, you know, come down to earth and look at the actual statistics. Eli, you know, completion percentage, quarterback rating. He's not really used to throwing to guys like Shepard, finesse wide receivers. He's more of a straight on throwing the tall Burris, Boss, throwing to receivers that are usually taller, giving him shoulder fades. We're not seeing him throw the ball.
Calvin, I hear you. Calvin, I hear you. But let's not forget the years Victor Cruz had with him back in 2011, 12, and 13.
Steve Smith.
Let's not forget the 115
you know
catch year by Steve Smith.
That's something I'm just bringing up. Right. Go on.
No, that's it. I mean, those are the two big guys that I wanted to mention, Steve Smith and Cruz, and not to mention Odell Beckham Jr., who, by the way, has had a couple pretty good years with Eli Manning. He's not exactly, you know, 6'6".
Last time I checked. I mean, here's what I will say about Eli, okay? For everyone who was down on him, what I want you to do yourself a favor. Go to the internet and call up his career stats. And what you will see is that for all the complaints that people are making about Eli – look at his career completion percentage, which is 59.6, and this year he's at 63. Look at the fact that his touchdown percentage for his career is 4.7, and this year it's 4.6. So what's so bad about that? Right. Look at the interception percentage for his career, which is 3.2, and right now it's 2.8. So what? I agree with you. He's been inconsistent.
Yeah, right. But Paul, and I get looking at the career interception percentage, but it is also his highest interception percentage since 2010.
All right, but 2.8 is not exactly a horrible interception percentage. That's decent.
Oh,
that's,
you know,
decent.
What? I'm sorry. I was looking at the bottom of the list, not the top. So this is his highest since 2013. No, you're right. That's not terrible. I agree with that.
No. I mean, if you didn't see, here's what I'm telling you. If you looked at Eli's line, close your eyes for a second. Forget the passes that were thrown in some tight spots, some of the wobblers, some of the.
Let's talk about it, because that Steelers game.
Wait
and
a
the
second.
Vikings game
okay.
on Monday night. Yeah, that was a perfect example.
Okay, but now close your eyes for a second, and then just look at that stat line. If you can get away from some of the visuals of some of the balls he's thrown, where he has been inconsistent, and I've said that a billion times, he's been inconsistent. His stat line says to you he has not nearly had the bad year that people want to make it out to be. He's been a hell of a lot better than his critics want to say. I'm just telling you. That's the facts.
Right.
But because some of the inconsistent games that he's had, and I've been the first one to say it, they've looked ugly, and they make it look worse.
So with this said, what are we looking from, you know, Eli in the playoffs? What type of swag are we looking from him?
I'm going to tell you what. Go back to the Super Bowl seasons again, and I don't like to do this very much, but what I do think it's relevant in one instance. Eli Manning, who throughout his career has had inconsistent stretches, I think that's fair, throughout his career at different times.
And has been a high-risk quarterback throughout his career.
Has usually shown in his postseason history, this is the sixth time he's going to the postseason, has usually shown that he plays as clean as ball.
He tends to take care of the ball better in the. And I'll say this too, and I asked Victor Cruz about this too, Calvin, which will air on our radio broadcast on Sunday. And I asked him if the offense is a little bit more cognizant of maybe being slightly more conservative and not putting the defense in bad spots because they're playing so well, turning it over. And you know, he said, "Look, we want to score as many points as we want, but we also want to make sure if we give the ball to the other team, you want to do it with a punt, and you don't want to do it with an interception." So to me, heading into the playoffs, I'm not looking for Eli to put up 40 points. I'm looking for him to protect the football, be efficient, and not put this very good defense in bad spots.
That's right. And that's why I said, you know, I wanted to talk about the secondary because a lot of these wins that the team has, you have to credit Dominique Rogers Cromartie. You have to credit Landon Collins in that Rams game. Giants did not score. No type of momentum until he gets that pick six and takes it to the house. You have to credit the secondary. We can sit here and say any given Sunday. We can sit here and say this is an offense that they all know how to run the ball spectacularly. Odell Beckham Jr. can light it up in a second. But I'm just not seeing 29 points, 28 points, people missing extra points a game. I'm not seeing, you know, they could have scored 30 points the Redskins game. All they needed was a field goal. They couldn't do it. So I got to say, that secondary is going to come up big. You know, at the same time, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, or Dak has to beat Landon Collins one, two, or three times maybe. That has not happened yet. No quarterback has not done that this season yet. So when you got guys like Eli Apple at Ohio State his first year with something to prove, something to play for, J.J., then you got JPP coming back, I really can't say what's to happen, but I do think the Giants will definitely win their first-round playoff game, and I don't think they lose to Washington this week.
All right, appreciate the call, Calvin. Thanks, man. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the calls and say what's up to Steve up in West Point. Steve, how are you?
Hey, John. Hey, Paul. How are you guys?
Doing great, Steve. What's up with you?
Hi.
Let me just little post-Christmas flag, and I'm getting ready for the new year. So
nice.
Excited. Hope you guys had a good Christmas.
Happy New Year.
Yes. So, you know, this is a good segment of that last point. So one of my points I wanted to talk about. I wanted to bring up Eli Manning. And I think as Giants fans, we're a little spoiled. And I've been a long-time Giants fan, so I can remember Dave Brown. I can remember Danny Cannell. You know, these types of names don't sit well with Giants fans as far as history goes.
No, they
and
don't.
And Eli Manning is compared with Phil Simms, who in New York Giants history is one of the greatest quarterbacks to play. And Eli Manning is a two-time Super Bowl champion, MVP. And if people can keep that in mind, there hasn't been another quarterback in Giants history to win two Super Bowls for this organization other than Eli Manning. He's brought us to two Super Bowl victories. So as much flack as he's gotten throughout this year, and he's even admitted he deserves some of it, there's been years where he carried this team on his back into the playoffs where there was no run game, there was no defense, and we went into the playoffs smoking hot because of Eli Manning and that passing attack. So I just don't want anyone to lose focus when, even if this was his last year and he didn't got nothing out of Eli Manning anymore, he got us two Super Bowl victories. The guy has done everything we've ever asked him to do.
Well, let's put it this way. This is the sixth year that Eli has brought the Giants into the postseason, and he's been in the league 13, John, right? The first year he was only a part-time starter.
Correct.
Warner was the starter. So I guess out of his 12 full seasons, he's been to the playoffs half the time. Phillip Rivers has only been to the playoffs, I think, five times, and Big Ben, I think, nine times. Of course, the Steelers over the course of time have had a much more consistent, successful overall team than the Giants have had. But to me, Eli doesn't have to apologize for anything.
Well, how many times has Eli gone to the playoffs, you said?
He's brought the Giants six times as a starting quarterback. This year included.
This year included?
Yes.
Yeah, 08, and then he had the two first-round losses. Okay.
So, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, to me, half of the guy's years where he was the starter, they went to the playoffs. I see no shame in that. I don't understand, you know, the people who want to crush this guy. And quite frankly, you know, across the board, his comeback victories, he's top 10 all-time in the NFL. You know,
well,
his game-winning drives, he's top 10 all-time in the NFL.
They those for that
since
long
1960.
Either. Right.
Which is the modern era.
Right.
Modern era pro football started, obviously, with the Giants-Colts game in 1958.
They've really tracked game-winning drives going back that far?
1960.
And comebacks?
They go back to
60. I didn't realize that.
Now, I wish they went to 58 because that is that's when it happens. The 58 Giants-Colts game is when the modern era of football started. Mm-hmm. I wish they would just go those previous 2 years and go back and research them, and then we have a real nice complete package.
Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate on Eli for one second just on this year. Only three quarterbacks have thrown more interceptions than him this season.
Hmm.
That's a problem.
Yep.
Okay, Dan Fouts threw a ton of picks.
Different era.
No,
yeah,
but
Eli hasn't thrown really good balls sometimes.
Paul, you have to admit, when only three quarterbacks have thrown more interceptions than him, that's not a good thing.
I don't have all the numbers. I don't want to go through it now, but to me, interception percentage is more important than number of interceptions. Now, I'm going to have to go look at this now. Where do guys like Marino, Fouts, Unitas, some of the greats?
Year.
No, but I think we're talking about his overall legend and where his body of work lies.
Yeah, but you can't compare the way they throw passes in today's NFL to how they did it in
the
80s.
No, because they throw more now.
No, but back in the day, they threw everything down the field. They have so many automatic completions now that they didn't have
that's
in the
true
80s.
Too.
Come on.
That's true,
you know that.
That's true, too.
Can you imagine someone in the 70s or 80s completing 70% of their passes?
No, it's impossible.
No, it's impossible.
When a guy did 60, it was like world.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Montana was the most accurate quarterback ever. He completed barely 60.
But the only number that you could even possibly squint at on Eli is his pick number, because all of his other numbers are fine. There's nothing wrong with his other numbers, his yardage numbers, his touchdown numbers. You know, his completion numbers have certainly been terrific the second half of his career.
He's in just this year, he's 14th in yardage in the league. I hate the way they rank quarterback rating. They put all these guys in here that have like one attempt at things.
Quarterback
like that.
Rating is just don't go there. But, you know, again, to me, I think the game winning drives and the fourth quarter comebacks, that's probably more on his shoulders than the team. I do think a quarterback who does those things, he's the guy with the ball in his hands in the final minutes of a game who most controls the outcome of the game. And he's top 10 all-time going back to 1960 in fourth-quarter comebacks and in game-winning drives.
But, of course, those stats –
that's a big deal.
Those stats also punish the quarterbacks that have leads at the end of the games and aren't trying to come back.
Well, doesn't punish them.
Yeah,
it simply says
they don't have the opportunity to have a game-winning drive if they're winning.
Right, but that doesn't mean they were bad. I would never detract from a quarterback who doesn't have those numbers.
Oh, okay.
But I will add to a quarterback who does. That's the difference. I'm not giving you demerits.
I got you.
You know?
Right. Sorry, Steve. I kind of took over your phone call there. Finish up.
Sorry.
Man,
No, I think it's great. And that's what I was trying to say is I think historically what Eli Manning has done, if you want to talk about his interceptions, I get that, John. And he's made a couple of, not even just interceptions, he's thrown into double coverage a lot. And we're trying to put balls this year where he really shouldn't have. And a lot of that stuff, but if you look at history, one year, how many tip balls did he have for interceptions? I mean, so the stats,
that's absolutely true.
Like the Pro Football Focus, they do a fantastic job, but the stats are tricky if you don't know the whole story, right? So, I mean, you can look at his numbers and say, oh, wow, well, that's a lot of interceptions that year.
Look at that one year, what was it, 3 years ago?
Hands.
3 years ago, he had 9 picks that were because of wrong routes, 6 of them were by Reuben Randle. And people killed Eli for his interceptions that year, and I could tell you for a fact, I knew 9 of them were not on him. I mean, you know, but every quarterback has those.
Paul, you know why they kill him? Because Eli Manning is the ultimate team player, and he'll never throw any under
the critics are jealous. That's all it is.
He cleared it up. he could have easily cleared it up and said, hey, you know what? I threw that ball to Reuben Randle. He was supposed to be in that spot, but he wasn't. That's why the ball got picked off.
By the way, guys, and Steve, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. It's not because the critics are jealous.
Some of them are.
Go back to the history of New York sports. When a team,
well, they never appreciate anybody. They didn't appreciate Patrick Ewing either.
Thank you. They didn't appreciate Phil Simms.
No.
They didn't appreciate Patrick Ewing.
Or John Franco.
There's been hundreds of guys that they haven't appreciated around here.
You're right.
Until they leave and then they're gone.
That is.
It's pretty consistent, actually. It's actually unfortunate because it shouldn't be that way. But that's just the way it is.
And much like Simms, Simms for most of his career did not have a great receiving core to throw to.
Right.
And for Eli, half of his career, he's not had premier receivers.
Wait, what half?
Go back.
The first 3 years, maybe. That's it.
Well, outside of the Toomer-Burris combination.
Yeah.
And now we had Cruz. And for a while, it was kind of Cruz because Randle wasn't really that great.
Hakeem Nicks.
Hakeem Nicks gave him a couple of years.
Steve Smith.
Yeah, but there were years there where it was only one.
Since 2007, he's had good wide receivers.
Hold on.
Let's not be silly.
Hold on. I'm gonna do something because I looked this up the other day and I was surprised myself when I realized it. I mean, for example, in 2008, Dominic Kixon was his leading receiver. Okay. Now, when he had Burris and Toomer for three years,
hurt that year though.
Well, yes. Well, that counts though. He wasn't available. He wound up midway through the season. He did the thing with the gun.
That's literally 1 year.
Okay, but Burris and Toomer for these 3 years. Before that, it was Toomer, and there wasn't much else on these teams.
Yeah, but Eli barely played in 2003, and then he had 1 year in 2004 without Plaxico Burress. Burress showed up in 2005 and was there through 2008, right?
Okay.
That was his final year. So he had Burress for all those years, and he had Toomer through 2007, all right? And then in 2009, he had Steve Smith.
Let's go into that.
And I believe
we'll go into it.
2009 was also Nix's rookie year, right, if I'm not mistaken?
Much then. As a rookie, what did he catch, 30 passes?
Yeah, but, Paul, come on. You can at least – I mean, Victor Cruz and Akeem Nix might have been the best wide receiver combination of football in 2011. Steve Smith caught 115 balls. He has Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, come on. He's had receivers. Let's not be
not
silly.
Not for all his career.
For most of it. He had Burris for every year but two.
All right, hold on.
I mean, come on now. Let's not be silly about it.
Steve Smith started 15 in 2009, and Hakeem Nix started 6. Hakeem Nix was virtually a non-factor that year. So basically, he had one receiver in 2009. In 2010, he had...
He had one receiver that caught 115 passes.
Okay. He had 79 out of Nix, 60 out of Manningham.
And 48 out of Steve Smith before he got
48
hurt.
48 out of Steve Smith. Okay, that's pretty good. So we had two guys there. I'll give you that.
So we found 3 years now when he didn't have guys that you didn't like.
All right, we'll keep going. I'll get to the next call. I'll keep looking.
Let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. He's up next. Joe, I don't want to have a whole show complaining about the referees here. So
No. You weren't here yesterday. I didn't comment.
You didn't call yesterday.
I have just one comment on that, and I'm getting off of it.
Got it.
Where Howard and them were discussing that all day yesterday, and Paul feels like I do. The only thing I want to say on that burns me the most in that game was there was three questionable calls the Giants got 15-yard penalties on that led to Eagles scores, and the one outrageous one at the end the Giants didn't get.
Okay.
That could have changed it.
Sure, and what's next?
Like
by the way.
Says, they're up in the box. Let them stop it and review it. They can do that.
Oh, no.
Game.
But, Joe, then you open up a
case. We're
going to be sitting there for
a touchy fall. That's
Joe,
the way I feel.
We're going to be sitting there for 4.5 hours.
I want to win the game or lose the game the right way. It's just sickening. It's every game. Okay,
Joe, first of all, it isn't every game, Joe. That's nonsense. See, now you guys are getting me upset, and I don't like that.
Well, it's just too much that I see it. So, Like that's Paul feels the way I feel. I want to get it right. So okay, now I'm moving on to our game here.
2012, by the way, only one guy more than 60 catches. Cruz.
Oh, you forgot the
2012.
So but who were the two receivers though? How do you know that's on the receivers and not on Eli?
Yeah, but Nix only started 11 games because he was hurt a lot of the year. Martellus Bennett had to catch 55 passes.
The Giants had
That's not a great receiving
core.
Oh, my God. Paul, Victor Cruz and Nix were the two starting wide
receivers. Yeah, but Nix was banged up. He was a shell of himself.
But Victor Cruz is a Pro Bowler.
Yeah, but so that's one Pro Bowl guy and the rest
How
of the receivers.
How many Pro Bowl guys does he need? Come on now.
Fouts had, like, a bunch of guys.
Well, that's great. Dan Fouts is one of the best wide receiver groups in the league. Want to go back to Ben Roethlisberger's receivers and compare him to Eli's? I'm happy to sit here and do that for you.
Hey, Happy New Year's, guys. I'm going to butt in and get my two cents
anyway.
In here.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Joe.
Going on to the Giants game here now. The Redskins are going to be playing die-hard hard, and we're going to be playing hard, too. But we've earned it. Third quarter, I'm telling you, these guys, I'm getting out. I'm getting Manning out. I'm getting Beckham Jr. on offense. Anybody else on the offense that's banged up a little bit, I would get them out. On defense, I want Vernon, Collins, Snacks, and Hankins out. These are the guys I don't want to lose. These guys play hard. I don't want no concussions or anything. These are the guys I want going into the playoffs healthy. The rest you can play.
We'll let Coach know, Joe.
let
him know.
On offense, I just think we should give Larry O'Donnell another chance. He could have made that play possibly that Ty couldn't make where Eli threw that ball real deep. I want to get him in there, and I want Adams. Let Eli throw it to them like in the red zones. I think if we get confidence on them, they could be another weapon to help us. So that's basically all I wanted to say. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year's. Go Giants.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate the call. Good
Can
stuff,
I do
man.
Him one better?
Please, go ahead.
I'm getting Eli out of there after the first quarter. I'm not even going to
I'm
the third.
That. And, folks, by the way, I'm not trying to tell you Eli's not a really good quarterback and you would have trained him for anybody. That's fine. I'm not making that point. But, I think Eli's done enough where we don't need to, come up for reasons.
I only do that because there are still some staunch people who are so against him. They're telling me he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. They're telling me that he's overrated, blah, 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 blah. I'm not trying to tell you he's one of the 10 best quarterbacks who's ever played the game. I'm not going to do that. That's crazy. That's crazy. But what I am telling you is that for his period of time in the league, okay, the period that he has played, to me, he is a Hall of Fame quarterback because he is one of the best to play his position during his time period.
You will not get an argument from me on that.
And I just feel like there are still people who refuse to buy into that. So it's like you got to try to dig up all of these arguments for him. And it's not that I'm trying to make him better than he is. I just think he is what he is and should be recognized as such. That's all.
That's fair. Let's go to Chris in Syracuse. He's up next. Chris, how are you, pal?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing well, Chris. How are you, pal?
Okay, good. I calmed down a little bit from yesterday because
you were upset yesterday, Chris.
Howard had me all fired up for the for that talk
about
yesterday.
What
about the whole reviewing egregious penalties thing. So we don't have to get back into it.
Okay.
But I was amped up. A couple points. I wanted to talk about Reese. I wanted to be the guy that probably nobody's going to be happy with right now because. Well, first, I actually want to hit on a couple points that you guys did and then make that point.
Sure.
Don't forget, in Cleveland, JPP had that pick or fumble six or whatever to get those points up on the board. So the offense
didn't
put those points up.
That is true. Good point.
Okay, now you guys kind of hit on my other thing with Eli. Why I think he's getting more criticism this year maybe than in some years past is because of the read and react offense that Gilbride used to run and the wrong routes and the bad breaks and the tip balls and everything. And a lot of times, Eli might have 15, 16 interceptions on a year, and I would look and say maybe five or six were on him from either a poor decision or a poor throw. This year, I don't think that that's the case. I think that more of them are kind of falling on him than not. But I love Eli. I hope he plays until he's 45 years old and has another whole bunch of great seasons. I really do. I'm just concerned that we're starting to see a decline, and we won't really know this year. But the other thing with the fourth quarter comebacks, I have zero confidence anymore that that's going to happen. There was a time where Eli Manning in the fourth quarter, you know what I mean, you put your feet up and feel great about it. I'm not so sure that I do at this point in time. It seems like a lot of that's, really, really in the rearview mirror. So, hopefully if we have to see another one, we do. But so those are those points kind of real quick. I also agree with Paul. Even though, Cruz was kind of like a poor man's number one receiver that did really great, but we didn't really have like a number one outside receiver for a lot of those years. That's just my opinion, but
you know what's funny? Plaxico Burress and Amani Toomer, between the two of them, never made a Pro Bowl.
Right.
So, I mean, if you really – I don't want to get back into this argument with John.
Right.
But who were the Giants' Pro Bowl receivers that Eli had in his career? Victor Cruz went once. Steve Smith went once. Odell Beckham has gone twice, and he's going to go a third time this year. That's a combined – that's a combined five Pro Bowl years out of receivers.
Can you name me how many Pro Bowl receivers Philip Rivers has had?
I don't know. I haven't looked. We could look.
Vincent Jackson.
It's only been one for his whole career?
As a wide receivers,
but
yes.
See, Philip Jackson to me is not Eli Manning. Eli Manning to me goes to the Hall of Fame before Philip Rivers does.
I agree with that 100%, but my point is that... How
many Ben?
Pro Bowl receivers?
What's the total amount of receiver Pro Bowl?
I imagine probably Antonio Brown did... Did Santonio Holmes go to a Pro Bowl?
Sometimes it's deceiving. I would have thought that like Burris would have gone to one, but never
did. The only two guys that would qualify would have to be Antonio Brown and Holmes, right? I don't know.
That
group would even come close to qualifying. To be honest with you.
I don't think so either. It's a good question though.
Anyway,
Real quick though, the point I wanted to call in on is that I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. And I think we've had a great season, and I'm glad that obviously that we're in the playoffs, and we'll see what happens. But in my heart, I really still think that we're about a year away. I think that Reese did a really nice job and should get a lot of credit for getting us back kind of in shape, especially after all the criticism that he's faced. There was too many holes, I think, in the dam to plug them all, and we really missed having a fullback and a blocking tight end on the roster. And I know Johnson went down, Whitlock went down, and I think that maybe we were thinking, well, we'll get by without it. And obviously, I think that was a mistake. But so that's really where I feel like in my heart, if they can address those couple of things and some more things for next year, I really think that we'll be in real great shape. But we're here now, and so let's see what we see and hope for the best. So thanks for taking my call, guys.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513.
All right, so A.B. five times. Mm-hmm. Hines Ward. Now you're saying not Wallace?
Hines Ward made the Pro Bowl mostly before Roethlisberger became quarterback, but fine.
But in 2004 it says. That was his rookie year.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's a total of seven Pro Bowl wide receiver seasons between Mike Wallace, Hines Ward, and Antonio Brown. That's seven total. Eli's had five total from his three guys. Rivers, we could check on Rivers, too. I don't know. I understand, though. You're right. Toomer was really good. Best receiver ever in Giants history.
Burris was really good.
Burris was outstanding.
And Knicks were really good.
I don't understand. Burris never made one.
I don't want to take anything away from the Giants wide receivers over the last 10 years. I thought they've been pretty good. And frankly, the Giants, and here's the thing. If they're not real good, then the Giants really didn't appropriate their resources really well. Because they used a lot of high draft picks and a lot of money on wide receivers.
Wow.
I think they're pretty damn good.
The Knicks was supposed to be really good for a long time.
What are you guys? Injuries caught up with them. What are you going to do?
And same thing with Manningham. Manningham was pretty darn good. In fact, a really, really good number three.
Best number threes in the year
and
in the league.
There goes his knee. Of course,
Steve
he went
Smith's
to San Fran.
Also. Same deal.
Steve Smith's knee also. There goes the knee. So
Eli had some good receivers to throw the ball to, though.
Would have been real nice if he had a healthy Knicks for a few years or Steve Smith healthy for a few years.
Absolutely.
Anyway, the caller got my point. These guys were not considered elite by league standards.
No, it wasn't Terrell Owens and Marvin Harrison or Randy Moss, but there's only so many of those guys to go around.
Real nice for the 49ers quarterbacks to have all those guys they had all the years.
Well, Jerry Rice
is pretty good. Rice, Taylor, T.O.
I mean, John Taylor, how many Pro Bowls did he make?
I don't know. He was damn good.
All right, let's go to Marco up in Connecticut. Marco, what's up?
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's up, Marco?
Happy New Year.
You too.
It's been a long time since I've called in. I'm going to call in the offseason, and I'd like to get, Paul, we could talk about that Eli, the whole conversation about Eli and the Hall of Fame. But the thing about Burris, I was just listening as I was on hold. The thing about Burris, he was a number one wide receiver for us, especially if you're a Giants fan and you watch the games, you know what a matchup
like. I love Plaxico Burris.
But the thing about Plaxico and Eli is – Plaxico kind of his peak years was like before the wide receiver boom in the NFL, where like quarterbacks really got protected.
Yeah.
And had he been playing maybe like 3 years later, 2 years, even 2 years later, I think he would have been in many Pro Bowls. But that's you know, not to his fault, of course. I called in today because I want to talk about the Giants going on the road here. And I think Sunday's game is really, really important because they're going to play in a hostile environment with Washington needing this win. And I think that is great, great, like, practice for them to set them up going on the road in the playoffs. You know, there's been so many comparisons with the Super Bowl runs. This doesn't compare to the Patriots game in 2007. It was just totally different.
Totally different.
Especially,
totally different. But
you cannot replicate what they're going to go into Washington and get from that crowd and the noise and where that might lead going into the wild card round the following week. Here's my concern, though. The Giants on the road this year, if you just look at their season, that first game against Dallas, they won. They won in Dallas. But kind of hard. I almost throw that out the window. It was game one of the year, and the Giants usually play pretty well in Dallas. But then after that, they lost in Minnesota. They lost in Green Bay. They did not play the Rams in L.A. They played them in London and won, which was a home game for L.A. And then they won in Cleveland.
Yep. Right. John mentioned this before.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't listen. But I don't know where you get another big win on the road for the Giants. And that's my big concern with them going into the playoffs.
We opened the show by saying this is the best pretest you could possibly pick out for this team.
Okay. All right.
And you agree.
And I totally agree. I looking at the four teams, Detroit, Green Bay, Atlanta, Seattle, everyone talks about Seattle. I think on a neutral site or even in New York, I think the Giants match up well with Seattle.
I agree.
But you put them out there, it's a whole different situation with the crowd noise. This is where the offensive line is really going to have to buckle up. And I know why people are saying we need to rest some guys this weekend. But I think you got to get the offensive line playing in a really good game. Get that offense in a good place. I was talking to my brother the other day who was arguing about how the Steelers are resting all their top guys. And he said, well, why don't the Giants do that? And I said, well, the Giants offense doesn't just pick up and go like the Steelers offense. The Giants are still waiting for their offense to come around.
Yeah, Marco, I think you just made a great point because the Steelers offense has been a strength of theirs all year. They're rolling. They're going at 100%. You can rest those guys and not worry about them picking up where they left off. With the Giants, on the other hand, you want to try to start some momentum this week by maybe playing your starters a little bit. I agree.
Yeah. And thanks, John. Let me just ask you this before I jump off. The offense this year and last year, and it's such a big question, like why is the offense struggling so much? People are having so much trouble talking about it or answering that question. Would you agree that a major change from last year to this year is a blocking tight end and a fullback? I mean, just if we were just looking at the roster side by side, would you agree with that?
Well, we didn't have – the Giants didn't have a blocking tight end last year, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, Daniel Fells was there.
He had the foot thing way, way early.
Yeah,
that doesn't count.
Right. But it's. Or then maybe then. Hey, let's just isolate it on the fullback. Is that? Would you?
It is a huge difference.
In fairness, though, it isn't as though Nikita Whitlock played a bunch of snaps last year.
No, but it does make a difference. I mean, we were talking a deal about this on the show the other day, John, and from a schematic and formation perspective, whether or not the production is different or dramatically altered. It is different in terms of the formation and the schematics and the philosophy and what defenses are looking at when they see a fullback back there. It does make a difference. And quite frankly, Will Johnson was supposed to be here. He got hurt. What are you going to do? I mean,
and
I would love –
he'll be here next year.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness Will Johnson's going to be here next year. Thank goodness.
Yeah, but Paul and John, I like McAdoo's dedication to the running game. Like, even though they've struggled, he keeps going back to him. Even in game, he does show that he's dedicated to getting back to the run. But my question is, why? I would have never thought, and they had to know. I mean, it was Will Johnson and Nikita Whitlock, and there was some discussion if there was going to be a true fullback here. Well, when we lose both guys, what was the mindset? Oh, we could, like, are we just going to pick up and go? Is our offensive line set, or is Danelle and Ty good enough at tight end to get us to where we were last year? Because the struggles are mind-boggling. And, hey, going on the road, they're going to have to run the ball. They're going to have to protect Eli. So I'll leave you guys to that. And I Happy New Year again. Go Giants, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Okay.
Thank you, Marco.
The mindset was when Whitlock went down and Will Johnson went down, it was we can do without the fullback because we're going to have these three really good wide receivers on the field. They thought that Cruz was going to have a chance to make it back. They were hoping Shepard was going to be as good as the draft people thought he would be, although he's turned out to be really good. Much better, I think, anybody might have thought in his rookie season. He's going to be on the all-rookie team, John.
Sure.
He's second in the NFL among rookie receivers and catches and stuff.
I agree.
He's really good. And so Coach McAdoo.
It'll probably be him and Michael Thomas, to be honest with you, 1 and 2.
Those will be the two guys.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind. And so they thought that, wow, we got these really good receivers. We got some depth at receiver. Look at Roger Lewis and, of course, King and Poe and Powell and all these guys that were looking good in summer camp. Looked like they had a good receiving core. And so, okay, you know what? Let's move forward.
If I gave them a time machine, would they go back and make a different decision?
I would hope so. I don't know the answer to that, but I would hope so. But that would be, again, 20/20 hindsight. At the time, they loved their receiving core, and they decided, you know what? We can go without the fullback. We're going to move forward.
And they probably thought they could develop Danelle or Ty or Adams into a guy that could fill that role. And
a lot of times you do.
Yeah.
A lot of times you think that. By the way, Eli Manning, 5 game-winning touchdown drives this season, only 5 in the previous 3 years combined. So that one caller before who said he doesn't have confidence in him anymore, I think that's actually in reverse because the previous three years you could say it, but not this year.
Right, but the point I think he was making is that since 2011,
he
hasn't been the same.
No.
Since 2011, he was off the charts, obviously.
He was off the charts.
Right. And since then, he hasn't been quite as consistent in getting those fourth quarter comebacks. But
he had 8
year,
of them.
But this year, it obviously has been better.
Has 5 in Michigan.
All right, let's go to Carl in Syracuse. He'll be our final caller of the show. Carl, what's up?
Hi. Bringing in the new year with Paulie and John. Nice.
Thanks, Carl.
How's it going?
Hey, good. Staying on topic with the tight end, it looks like they have been sprinkling Will Ty into that role that, you know, Will Johnson probably would have been playing, where they're starting to put him in the backfield as a lead blocker and then start to sprinkle in some – you know, Jarrell Adams. So I like the direction we're headed going into the playoffs. You know, I think we're going to see more of that. So they've been developing those guys in those roles.
Well, you know, here's what I will say. There's no question over the last month of the season, Jarrell Adams has gotten a lot more snaps. Larry Dinnell had gotten hurt, and then when he got healthy, Jarrell Adams had stolen those snaps because he had shown some promise. Whether or not that continues, Lord only knows. I mean, Jarrell Adams is still a rookie, and he's still quite raw, but the Giants need him to step up, and they need production out of him. I would hope for the Giants' sake, bless you, John, I would hope for the Giants' sake that Jarrell Adams makes some key plays in the next month. I really do, because I think he could be pretty good.
I feel like when they put it in his hands in those big situations when he has been called upon in you know, limited situations, he's been coming up big.
Well, this is a guy, John, goes back to what we started the show when you asked me. This is a guy who can benefit immensely from this game Sunday.
I agree. I'm with you.
And back to the with Eli Manning and some of his struggles during the season, I feel like some of it is a lot of our receivers are being blanketed, and it's kind of become a trend. And you know, a lot of situations they've been getting away with it, maybe even a little early. But then there's Beckham. He's got that, you know, elite receiver effect where he can take over a game. You can't really blanket him the way that you can our other receivers on the field. He just you can see it. And I think one of the keys is going to be getting him going early and often in all of the games.
Well, I mean, look.
Thanks for the call, Carl. We got to run, pal.
I'll say one thing here. And, John, you and I have watched enough of this. Teams have now, in my mind, I've now seen it all because Philly at times tripled Beckham in Philadelphia.
Can you blame him?
Tripled. I saw it. So we've seen press, bump and run, off coverage, double coverage, bracket coverage, triple coverage. I don't know that there's anything else. Cut off his legs? What else is there? I'm telling you, I don't know. I've seen every style of coverage known to mankind thrown at Odell Beckham Jr., and he's caught 96 balls and 10 touchdowns. What else can you do? Do what Josh Norman did, get in his head. That's about the only thing you can do to beat him.
Paul, good stuff. Enjoy the game on Sunday. And on Monday, we'll know exactly who's going to be in the playoffs. It'll be me and Dottino with you on Monday afternoon as we get ready for the Giants' first-round playoff matchup against to be determined. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelz.
See ya.
If you enjoyed this show, check us out on Coors Light Giants Game Day and the Wendy's opening drive on Sunday on WFAN. Pre-game at 2:10. We'll talk about the game. We'll also preview the playoffs as well on WFAN, of course. Then you have the post-game after the game as well. And you can see Paul on the Giants post-game show on MSG after the game as well. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelz. Have a great weekend. See you on Monday, everybody. Adios.